Welcome to our latest exploration into the source material. Today, we're unpacking the really blurry line between fervor, passionate zeal, and outright fanaticism in early modern Spain.
Right, mostly looking at the 15th to the 17th centuries.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And using a collection of research from scholars like Leslie Toomey and Ronald Cueto, we want to show you how people navigated this intense belief. Hmm. You might think of this era as just this monolith of strict Catholicism.
But it was actually a world of wild imagination and honestly surprising doubt.
Oh, totally. I mean, if you were a woman in 17th century Spain claiming to hear the voice of God, the Inquisition didn't just audit your soul. They literally checked your pantry. They were looking for chickpeas.
Which sounds completely absurd to us today. But, well, back then, your diet was considered the gatekeeper of your divinity.
Because of the whole medical view, right?
Exactly. It was all tied to the viscous humor theory of the brain. The medical consensus, which was pushed by thinkers like Francisco de Araujo, was that women had naturally soft or weak heads.
Basically a plumbing issue of the mind.
Yeah, pretty much. They thought if a woman was too moist or viscous, her brain just couldn't hold back phantasms. Diego Perez de Valdivia even gave specific dietary advice for maintaining chastity.
Right. So you had to avoid windy foods like chickpeas or, hot wine. So if a visionary like Angela Carranza writes 15 books, like thousands of pages of revelations, the authorities don't see a prophet.
No. They see a woman whose brain is leaking because she had a bad lunch.
But wait, I mean, if these women were alive today, they'd be massive bloggers or influencers, right? Calling it a medical humor issue feels like a highly convenient way to gaslight someone. Was this just a tool for social containment?
Oh, absolutely. It allowed the church to patronize them rather than outright persecuting them. If your visions are just vapors from your diet, your message loses all its authority.
Well, yeah. But as we move from the private pantry to the public square, the government's grip definitely tightened.
It did. You see this really clearly in the Immaculist versus Maculus rivalry in Valencia.
The Dominican rivalry, yeah. This is where it becomes a linguistic minefield. We're talking about the debate over whether the Virgin Mary was conceived without original sin.
Right, which to us might sound like a minor theological footnote.
But in 15th and 16th century Spain, it was basically the cornerstone of national identity.
It really was. To be Immaculist, meaning you believe she was born with sin, wasn't just a differing opinion. It was treated as political treason.
Yeah, in 1486, just failing to use the correct title, like Immaculate, could get you exiled. It's almost like a high-stakes modern cancel culture where a missing adjective makes you an enemy of the state.
That is a great way to put it.
But I struggle with that a bit.
Yeah.
If the state is policing your adjectives in your pantry so heavily, how did anyone manage to think for themselves? It feels like the church's indoctrination should have been a total success.
You'd think so, yeah. But the research from scholars like Nicholas Griffiths shows that popular reason was actually remarkably resilient.
Right. When the top-down doctrine hit the commoner, it got completely remixed.
Exactly. Take Andres de Sepulveda, the miller. He didn't just accept the terrifying abstract concept of purgatory.
Oh, the time fields guy. I love this story.
Right. He told everyone that souls purged their sins by digging in time and broom fields with a hoe.
Like a folk physics of the afterlife.
Yeah.
He turned theology into manual labor, which he understood. When the soul got tired of digging, the suffering just stopped. It's incredibly logical.
It is. And then you have Alonso Gomez, a tailor. He looked at the timeline of history and concluded that because the Virgin Mary lived before baptism was invented, she must have been a Moor.
Right, because she wasn't baptized. He wasn't even trying to be a heretic. He was just filling in the gaps left by the Jesuits with his own internal logic.
Yeah, just trying to make the story make sense.
But then, why did people like Francisco de Marsila just conclude that life was nothing more than being born and dying? If indoctrination was so heavy, how do you get pure nihilism?
Well, it shows that people were always questioning the reality around them. Some people even went further than remixing the story. They started questioning the physical props of the religion itself.
Well, you mean the desecrations?
Yep.
Like the famous case of the Cristo de la Paciencia in 1632.
Yes, exactly. A group of crypto-Jews was accused of whipping a wooden image of Christ. Now, we usually hear that and immediately think hate crime or, fanaticism.
But the accused, people like Francisco de Miranda, offered a really chilling, rational explanation.
This is the most profound part to me. They weren't attacking a god out of hate. They were conducting a scientific experiment.
They whipped the image to prove it was just a piece of wood.
Right. In a world totally saturated with Catholic symbols, they were testing the boundaries of materiality.
If it doesn't bleed, it's not divine. It's a completely rational demonstration in an era filled with superstition.
It flips the script entirely. The Inquisition saw pure fanaticism, but the so-called heretics saw an empirical test.
It really shows that even under the heaviest thumb of the state, people were desperately trying to find where the physical world ended and the spiritual began. Fervor and fanaticism are often just different labels for that same human drive to make sense of the divine.
Absolutely. Everyone was just trying to apply their own logic to a world dictating what they had to believe.
So we'll leave you with this final thought. If you lived in a world where your every single word could be a proposition for the Inquisition, what would you do?
Right. Would you have the courage to invent your own version of the afterlife?
Or would you just stick to the script to survive? Something to think about. See you next time.